There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Live vocal talk over the hour, 343-0106. That's the phone number and the text line. And you'll probably want to chime in on another bite at the apple. The bridge is back. I don't know. There's a lot of different ideas for headlines here. We'll find out what our buddy John Sharp from AL.com. But if you would have written an alternate headline to your story, what do you think? The bridge is back? Something like that?
Yeah, so I think that sounds pretty straightforward. The bridge is back, although
is it really
not like we had last year? So it's a different bridge of sorts.
Yeah. Now this is John. This is the North Bay Express.
Yeah, that's correct. That's what's been preliminarily termed the North Bay Express. What it would be is essentially what it sounds like, an expressway. There would be no exits or entrances onto this road. It would be a new road leading from Mobile to Baldwin Counties. Now, beyond the particulars with that, I mean, it would basically include the same bridge, the exit coming off Virginia Street in Mobile, crossing over the Mobile River, and then heading into Baldwin County. Now, what I'm not completely clear about, because again, this is still in the early stages. There's a lot of talking going back and forth, is my understanding, behind the scenes. But it's not totally clear where the exit would be in Daphne. And I think that's caused some concerns in the city of Daphne, as well as in Spanish Fort, because you have no true exits onto the causeway, meaning people can bypass Spanish Fort completely. And that is a concern of Spanish Fort Mayor Mike McMillan at this point. So, but again, a very early idea that's been tossed out there as an alternative, largely because it's much less expensive than $2.1 billion. We're talking somewhere around the range of $1.1 to $1.2 billion. So significantly reduced in cost.
So I wonder what the exits are part of it. What else is cut that drops that price? Because I remember the history of the original bridge project was $800 million. Then moved on up. Then it was $1 billion, and we ended up at that $2 billion cost. At one, why can they build this for essentially half of what?
Yeah, I got that same question. It's a really good question. Again, this is also very early in the process. We are talking about the same size bridge, something along the lines like 210 feet high, and then this expressway would be elevated to meet the AASHTO standards, which basically take into account the worst of the worst hurricanes hitting Mobile County, which was kind of controversial last mm-hmm. year when we were talking about this project. It would not include any demolition, though. That probably in itself is a big cost savings. There would be no demolition of the existing bayway. So we would have essentially three roads going across our body of water between Mobile and Baldwin counties. You would have the causeway, the bayway, and the expressway. At least that's the way it sounds at this point in time. Now, could there be a future teardown of the bayway? I would suspect so, but that's not right now part of the equation.
Well, would this North Bay Express, would this also be I-10, or would this be would it be I-10 one, or one I-10 or something, or would it just be the North Bay Express and be a different road?
Yeah, it would be named something separately. Right now, they're they just tossed out the name North Bay Express. again, we're very, very
so it wouldn't
early
be
in
I-10. It wouldn't be some I-10 spur. It itself would be a different road.
That's correct. I mean, it could be called the. I mean, you could essentially call it the I-10 Business Expressway. I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that yet. It would be an I-10 pathway, though. I mean, it is a connection between Mobile and Baldwin County.
Who proposes to build it? Is it government? Who's building this?
Well, right now, this is where we left off last year is when the governor declared this project dead. I mean, she basically said, here it is, Mobile and Baldwin counties, you figure it out if you want to resurrect it. And that's where we're at right now. We got Mobile and Baldwin County officials trying to come up with an alternative proposal that they would take back to the Alabama Department of Transportation and Governor Ivey's office for reconsideration. So we don't even know yet if ALDOT would even be amenable to this type of project or if the governor's office even wants to entertain it at this point. This is kind of where we're at. This is where the governor left things off at late last summer is, and I think her message has been clear since, is that it's up to Mobile and Baldwin counties to move this thing forward. And that's kind of where we're at right now. That's part of the discussions that are going on.
Yeah, you talk about in your story over at AL.com about the tolling of the Wallace Tunnel. And, you and I both said this many times, that to me, that's the keystone of the downfall of the project. When it came out that it would require tolling of the Wallace Tunnel, that's when I thought the wheels came off. So would this be a – because it would be separate, right? It'd be a separate roadway. So conceivably, this road could run and be tolled or whatever, but you would have a free Wallace Tunnel?
That's correct. The Wallace Tunnel, you would have a guaranteed free route across the a free Interstate 10 route, I guess you could say, across the Bayway. So the Wallace Tunnel would be – no, it would not be tolled, whereas previously – the Wallace Tunnel was tolled, and you're correct, that was politically unpopular in this area and ultimately led to the demise of the project. So that's kind of where they're starting at off right now, is that, we want to keep this untolled route. How the exact financing for this expressway winds up, we're unclear. Of course, it seems to be a lot less expensive than the previous project. So could they do this all through bonding? To be determined. I don't know. Would there be some element of tolling? It's still $1.1 billion or $1.2 billion. That's a lot of money. That's not a small amount of change. And in this era of tight government finances and especially difficulties of trying to find ways to finance very large road projects, it seems to me that, potentially some sort of toll would have to be in place, especially if we're still talking about a public-private partnership, which is not totally clear at this time either. So, it all depends on how ALDOT views this, how they would view an alternative.
Number one, would they give a go ahead? But I would say, I think politically, if you still had no toll on the Wallace Tunnel, people could go through. You could have this separate route with a toll even higher than what was proposed on the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project, and there would be some people that would complain and lament and all that stuff, but as long as there was a free option to stay on I-10, I think the number of people talking out against it would be a lot smaller than the last time.
From a political standpoint, I agree. I think you would have a lot less opposition, although there's still, let's face it,
I think people oppose everything. I mean, yes.
Right, that are hard and fast against any kind of toll. And how would they line up in all this as far as political influence? I don't, hard to say. I mean, we were a little surprised last year about the amount of opposition to the previous project. I mean, that thing just kind of blew up last spring. So, how would something like this be viewed? Right now, just kind of seeing some of the reactions to my story that I wrote yesterday is that a lot of people are kind of taking a cautious approach. They're just kind of taking this wait-and-see approach, saying that, this sounds a lot better than the previous project, but, let's see how this all, there's that distrust still of how the process was handled previously and would we see any surprises as this thing unfolds again.
Yeah, I do think, yes, there will be people that say, well, I'm suspicious of tolls. But if there was a guarantee that I-10 would remain free, or you could choose to go on the pay route here, this North Bay Expressway. Yes, there's people that oppose everything, but I think there would be a small number of voices out there that would say, oh, you can't build this. You know, if the toll was $8 on this thing, as long as you could choose to go on a route that's already open and not pay a toll, I think people say, well, good luck. Good luck, folks. You know?
Yeah, no, I agree. But, you know, then again, does this, you know, if you're talking about an $8 toll and then you have an option of no toll, you're who's going to take the $8
toll? Right. Just, that's, of course, that's part of this
discussion.
It'd be the
road to nowhere. And, you know, that's kind of like, well, so again, this is very early on. I think people shouldn't think this is a slam dunk. This is going to happen. But it is an idea that's been floated out there. The interesting to see, I mean, the next step in all this is the Eastern Shore MPO is going to be holding a meeting next week. I believe it's next Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock in Daphne. And I would anticipate maybe some conversation, public conversation, from some of those officials about this alternative. It'd be nice to hear a little bit more publicly about it.
Hey, can you hold on a second and run the news break?
Sure.
All right, coming right back, more with John Sharp with AL.com. Link that story up on the Twitter feed. Of course, you can find John's Twitter feed or just go to AL.com and check out the latest talk about the bridge. It's been quiet for a while, and now it's back. North Bay Express, North NBE, the North Bay Express. All right, be right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Hey, coming up, Dr. Bill Williams and your forecast. The weather is a-changing. Going to be more like winter coming up soon. That's on the way at 1:30. Continued conversation with my buddy John Sharp from AL.com. And from the bridge to the city council here. And we got a bridge on the east side, maybe. And we have a question of expansion of Mobile on the west side. And that was back on the docket this week with the Mobile City Council.
Yeah, that's correct. The Mobile City Council had an ad hoc committee meeting in which it was very robust. It was about a two-hour-long meeting and a lot of details, a lot of numbers floated out there as far as the true cost. And, of course, the city and the county have different views on that, how much it costs to police out in the police jurisdiction, which is a fairly, you know, involves about, 70,000 residents? I mean, that's an astonishing number, really, when you think about it. And that was the discussion the other day over at Government Plaza. A lot of attention, a lot of media coverage in the last couple of days about it. Still a hot issue that really still ties into the whole question about annexation that the council voted on back in November. So, you know, we're still dealing with that issue, which, you know, really is kind of the issue, I think, that sits out there when we start talking about rolling back the police jurisdiction.
Yeah, and yes, one is absolutely tied to the other, but it is interesting to get down to the nitty-gritty of what the real numbers are. I mean, people can disagree on what the city should do or not do, but I'm hoping that we have some real numbers to work off of, because you got the perspective of the county, you have the city's perspective, and there's definitely a canyon in between them.
Right, you're right. Of course, the city... their estimate is much different than the county's, and and they both laid out their viewpoints during that meeting. And as far as the cost of policing the jurisdiction, now from the city's perspective, it's much more costly. I think something around the lines of $24 to $25 million is what they estimate. Now the county comes back and they're saying it's not as expensive. Their range is somewhere around $13 million, and ultimately, you know, when you talk about the revenue that's pumped from the district, there isn't that much of a deficit at all. And so ultimately, they believe that the cost savings by rolling back the police jurisdiction simply are just not there. And from the county's perspective, if you roll back that police jurisdiction, you know, what is the plan going forward? You're talking to County Hudson, County Commissioner Connie Hudson. She'd like to see the city lay out a complete whole new strategic plan for growth for the city. She says, you know, where's this plan at? We'd like to know as county officials. Simply put, from her perspective, is that the county needs more than just 2 years to, roll out an entire plan for police and for fire and for whatever other public services that would be needed in a very densely urban area, or suburban area, however you would like to describe it. It is a well-matured area now when it comes to growth. It's not some rural enclave that the city and the county are fighting over.
Now, what about the option of a compromise? The police jurisdiction being at 3 miles, the proposal from Councilman Daves to pull the police jurisdiction back to the city limits. What if in the American tradition of compromise, they said, how about 1.5?
You know, you could see that potentially. That's an idea. You know, my understanding is that there's going to be another committee meeting, so we'll hear more, hopefully some more proposals. Right now we're talking about, you know, where the city and the county are on estimate-wise. The city council members are, some of the council members would like to vote on this sooner than later, which I find interesting because I think that there's other council members that would like to take a step back and continue with these discussions that might lead to such a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's, you know, there is interest from Councilwoman Bess Rich to have another committee meeting in which there will be more discussion about the matter at a later time. That date, I don't think, has been set yet. Councilman Joel Days indicated he'd like to have a vote of the full council by early February. I just don't see that happening, especially if there's going to be another committee meeting. And coming away from the meeting the other day, I felt like there was still a lot of questions and a lot of unknowns and what ifs, and we're still talking about annexation. Is that ultimately where we're wanting to go for another vote here? See if we can get one of the three council members to flip. I mean, Councilman C.J. Smallman, he made a comment that, well, I'd like to see where we're at with the community investment plan, the capital plan, and how much have we spent in the city? You know, are we looking at many more years are we looking at trying to invest in the city? And then can we, you know, maybe take a step back and see whether or not annexation could be, you know, financially feasible if we take a look at the capital budget? And I'm kind of paraphrasing what he might have said at that meeting. So, you know, there still seems to be a lot of different conversations going on with this issue. And to say we're going to vote on it right away seems to be, might be a little premature.
And maybe it's just the benefit of this proposal of ordinance from Joel Daves is what exactly you said, that there's now conversation instead of just being something that's put in, you know, in rhetoric when we're talking about X, Y, and Z, whatever other issue. There's actually now this is being looked at it in earnest, whether it bears fruit or not.
Exactly. Councilman Daves indicated, you know, when I talked to him about it early on, when he first introduced his proposal, he made the point to say this is not an issue of annexation. This is to be looked at separately. But then at the committee meeting, you know, Mayor Stinson he took the opportunity to bring annexation back up. You know, this is really what we need to do. And Councilman Joel Daves will say, you know, absent of annexation, this is the best possible course of action, because the city's current process of patrolling this area outside its city limits, this very dense urban type area, is not feasible financially for the residents who live within the city limits. So that's kind of where we're at right now. And it just doesn't seem that annexation is going to get another airing at this moment. Could that be the same? You know, will that be the same where we're at a couple months from now? Perhaps so, but maybe not. I just don't know. I mean, it seems like there's several different conversations going on right now when we're talking about this issue.
And also, I guess to complicate it, maybe once again in session this year, the bill being filed, I think it's by State Senator Chris Elliott this year, it was last year, giving municipalities more liberty to pull back from a police jurisdiction.
That's correct, yes. State Senator Chris Elliott will be proposing this legislation once again. And last time I talked to him about it, he feels confident about it. Of course, you know, time will tell. It is Montgomery, so we'll see.
But, preach.
Yeah, right. So, you know, but I don't, that has not come up in any of the local conversations that, hey, you know, that something might be done up in Montgomery here that, you know, let's all hold off and wait. That has not come up yet.
Did anybody mention, like, let's say there was the annexation, the original proposed, you know, where they were talking about a referendum for those folks or even a bigger area. Would the new would there be a new police jurisdiction? For some reason, let's just say, for the sake of keeping it simple, the 3 miles of the police jurisdiction now become city limits. That's the new city limits. Would there be another extended police jurisdiction 3 miles beyond that?
No, there would not be. And this came up, I don't remember who brought it up, but this did come up the other day where they indicated, there was some indication that there is state law, and it was just approved a couple of years ago, apparently, that limits the amount of extension you can have on the police jurisdiction. If you were to annex a geographical area that extends further to the west of Mobile, that doesn't automatically mean the police jurisdiction extends that far as well. So, yeah, there apparently is a restriction there, and so that there would not be a correlative extension of the police jurisdiction.
Hey, we're learning every day. I appreciate your reporting on this, John, and remind folks they want to reach out to you, find you on Twitter. Where do they go?
Yeah, I'm at JohnSharp99.
All right, as always, man, be good. Talk to you next week.
All right, Sean, thanks.
All right, John Sharp checking in. Yeah, you got to go. This is a benefit here of the ordinance proposed by Councilman Days. Is there actual real discussions of pros and cons for annexation going on? Pros and cons for police jurisdiction going on? It's actually, instead of just being political rhetoric, there's actually meetings on this, so. All right, coming right back, Todd Stacey joins us next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Talk to our buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Live from Montgomery, it's Todd.
Hey, Don, how's it going?
Going good, man. By the way, before we get into it, there's a lot of Montgomery talk I want to do here, but looking at the goings-on, that's what I call the impeachment proceedings, the goings-on in Washington. When yesterday, when they brought the articles of impeachment from the House over to the Senate, and you know they physically brought them over, I thought it would look better if they would have dressed in period clothing. Maybe something from the Founders' Day with the powdered wigs and the buckle shoes and all that. I mean, you spent a lot of time in Washington. What do you think? That look would have...
would have added to the solemn and serious nature of it. Well, I watched some of it. You know, when I watch it, I have to turn off the volume, no matter which channel it is, because it's nothing, you know, I can't stand just the constant, you know, commentary while it's going on. It would be, so yeah, I'm more of a C-SPAN guy when it comes to watching a serious impeachment proceeding. But right now, you know, the Senate, I mean, at this very moment, they're all going to, you know, they've taken their oaths and they're all going to sign, I guess, their signature on the impeachment articles to notify that they've received them. But Sean, I did notice that in the Senate, at least, they've managed to only use one pen, no ceremonial pen. So already they're ahead of the House.
Yeah, those are going to be, I'm sure the knockoffs are already on eBay for sale. Get your Pelosi pen.
Well, look, that to me, optics-wise, and I realize that that's sort of what happens for bill signings, but that's because bill signings normally are celebrations.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really bad optically, especially how they're trying to pitch this as, hey, this is our duty and we don't take any pleasure in this. And you're signing out memorabilia, you know, handing out memorabilia.
Yes.
You obviously are taking a little bit of pleasure in it. And so I thought that, you know, somebody should have thought better about that.
That's what I think happens with people from both sides that stay in a vacuum with only people they agree with, that everybody else is patting them on the back and saying, oh, Speaker Pelosi, that's a great idea. And you don't talk to anybody that's outside, you know, the hardened Democrats, and you don't hear people go, yeah, it's probably, you probably ought to not do that.
I think you're right. If we, you know, these days politically, we exist in our own little echo chambers and sort of feed our own beliefs. So yeah, if you'd asked anybody that had, you know, just a window into the world of a moderate voter, or just a normal American, handing out souvenir pins from an impeachment,
yeah,
it's a bad look.
All right, you know what? Let's talk about groups of people that want to go up there. They're watching all this go on in Washington, but yet they're actively campaigning for a job that takes them to Washington. And first of all, let's talk about the AL-1 and a House race, and we're getting to the Senate stuff here as well. But where are things standing as you see them now, and is there any new polling out there?
There is. We actually had some polling we reported this week in our Inside Alabama Politics edition. This was polling from the Chris Pringle campaign. So he had an internal poll done. Campaigns are starting to do this, right? Have their own internals. And if you get one that, you know, comes back pretty good, and he did, we were able to obtain that from the campaign. So, but we say right at the outset, right, it's their polling. This polling showed Bill Hightower, commanding lead of 25%. Behind him were Chris Pringle at 15% and Jerry Carl at 14%. So really a three-man race, but Chris Pringle and Jerry Carl right there neck and neck for second place. But more than anything, what this poll shows is that a runoff is very likely. It's unlike in some of these other districts, and even the Senate race, where you could see a candidate winning without a runoff. Pretty much everybody understands that a runoff is likely in the first district. So if you're Chris Pringle or Jerry Carl, man, they are, you know, neck and neck for that second place finish, which could get them into the runoff. And so it's really a race for second place and a really tight one.
Now, okay, and I want to come back to that. But if you were scoring it right now, and I said, which race, as it stands now, has a better chance of going into a runoff, AL-1 Republican primary or Senate Republican primary?
I'd say the AL-1.
Really?
Because Hightower, I thought early on, especially how he had a big announcement, did very well early on, I thought there was a chance that he could, you know, get to where he's winning without a runoff. But he just has not performed above that 25-30%. You've got to get 50% plus one.
Mm-hmm.
And his competitors are really strong. Whereas next door in AL-2, in the second district, Jeff Coleman, who is the only one on TV, is the only one with a significant presence, he has a really good chance to win without a runoff because nobody else has been able to compete on the airway. Same thing in the Senate. You could see a situation where Jeff Sessions pulls this thing out without a runoff. But in the first district, I think everybody agrees that it's most likely heading to a runoff. If Bill Hightower can spend the next, 50 days, 45 days, just, barraging the airways and doing really well, maybe. But as it stands right now, it's going to a runoff.
Okay, and something you wrote on Inside Alabama Politics, and exactly where my mind went, you said the first number that stands out, after looking at this polling, you said the first number that stands out is the 42% undecided. And that is interesting to me. Do you think that's because they're not yet engaged in thinking about votes, or is it because they're waiting for something from the candidates? I mean, 42% undecided, that's a big bunch of votes to go after.
It is, and there are different ways that these polls get conducted. Sometimes the way to cut down on an undecided number is to kind of give the respondents over the phone like more wiggle room, like say, well, would you probably vote for Hightower, or would you maybe vote for, testing leans. But this is a hard count. So, I'd say it's a couple of things. Nobody's up on the TV right now. I know that there's some candidates on radio, but TV's important. You got to get up on TV, and it's people are tend to take that easy because once you go up, you want to stay up, and we still got 45 days to Election Day.
Well, and you know what? I'll make a this will probably make people sweat here under the collar of the radio business, but I'll make a fair discussion. When you're advertising here, like at FM Talk 106.5, you're advertising to people that are engaged voters. Like this is a place to advertise to people that are going to vote and sway. They're going to vote. Now you're making them decide who they're going to vote for. I would argue that with television, you talk to such a general group that the majority of them are not going to vote. I mean, look at the numbers for the number of people who turn out, even on a presidential year, that turn out to vote in Alabama. But you're trying to, as much differentiate yourself from another candidate, you're trying to remind people to go vote, I think. I mean, there's some of those people that are, you're just trying to get them to the party.
Yeah, I mean, and ultimately, you're trying to build the kind of name recognition where people know who you are, but not in a bad way, right? I know that guy's name, but he's not a criminal or something. That's what you're trying to do. So, I expect that you're about to start seeing a lot on TV. And again, I agree with you. They're trying to reach the people that are already going to vote, that are likely to vote, and giving those people an idea of who they are. Hey, here's my name. Here's what I stand for. So that when they do go vote, the person that stands out the most is their candidate. That's the whole name of the game. And if you can break through with some clever advertising, even better. So, look, it's a three-man race right now. Hightower clearly has the lead, but it's not some kind of insurmountable thing, especially when you see 42% undecided.
When you also write here, the 300-pound gorilla in the room is the Club for Growth. And we've talked about Club for Growth over on the Senate side, right? Because they, I could say by default, they're backing Jeff Sessions, but they sure as heck don't like Bradley Byrne.
Yeah.
And who do they not like? Are they in this because they like Bill Hightower, or do they not like Jerry Carl or Chris Pringle?
Well, surely they like Bill Hightower. They like Bill Hightower. They like Jeff Sessions. And Club for Growth is the type of group where they want to get their guys in Congress, right? They want their people that kind of fit their ideology in Congress so they can count on them in the future. It's very much, the group that made up the Freedom Caucus. They call themselves different things over the years, but I guess now they've kind of settled on Freedom Caucus. So you're talking about 40 or 50 of the most conservative people. That has changed a bit in the Trump era because some of these spending bills they're still voting on, are supported by Trump. So it's not the same as it used to be.
Right, and remind folks about that. The Club for Growth decides your persona non grata if you vote for a spending bill or the gas tax or something like that. That's how they decide who they're not backing.
Right. So, we talk about Richard Shelby all the time and all the appropriations dollars that he brings out. Yep. Very important to Alabama. But if you support an appropriations bill,
you're out.
The Club for Growth is going to come after you. So, yeah, that's sort of the double-edged sword of votes in Congress.
I mean, once again, so somebody is elected, and there's a situation where an appropriations bill has things in it for Alabama. Lord knows, like you said, Senator Shelby, one of the best at that. But if you vote for anything that appropriates, even for your district or your state, you then become the candidate that Club for Growth will go after or won't support.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why they've not been happy with Bradley Byrne over the years, not just on spending stuff, but just on a difference of opinion as far as the role of government and all that. And it's perfectly fine position to have either way. Club has they have their favorites. They are not afraid to go attack people. I've worked in offices that we were on the receiving end of that, right? They came after Martha Roby for her support of the farm bill. Now look, that's
District
crazy.
She's not going to support the farm bill in District 2. Really?
Yeah, District 2 is two military bases and a bunch of farms in between. I mean, now look, that's their national agenda, but it doesn't necessarily line up with the state agenda all the time. Same thing with somewhere like Mobile. Yep. Right, the allocations for the port and all that's going to be for not just Mobile but the state of Alabama. That's important to vote for, but I'm sure that a more conservative group like Club didn't like that spending bill. So But that's, look, as you said, when you sign up to run for Congress, these are the tough choices that you have to make. It is interesting that this is an open seat, and so nobody has these votes in Congress already. Some of them are state lawmakers, and they have those votes. But you can make a lot of promises, but when you get up there and you're faced with, okay, you know, here's $400 million going to the Port of Mobile, and it's in an appropriations package that the Freedom Caucus wants you to vote no on. That's a tough call. So easy to make promises, a lot harder to govern.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to have you on to point this out, because when, you know, a group comes out against somebody, and I just want them to understand why. Because if Club for Growth comes in and starts running, you know, ads against against Pringle or against Jerry Carl, then, you know, they got to understand where that comes from. They may agree or disagree, but I just want people to have some kind of framing of the argument.
Oh, yeah, and you're going to hear it one way or the other. And it's always important to remember that these are Washington, D.C. groups. And you may have the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, another Washington, D.C. group, come in and run ads, and that's fine. It's, all is fair in the campaign world. But, yeah, typically they have their own agendas that are based out of Washington, D.C., not necessarily the district. So, yeah, it's good to be a discerning consumer of that advertising to know, okay, you know, where's their district, or where's their issues based out of? Where's their agenda formed? Is it locally, or is it in D.C.?
All right, coming right back, more with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Get that kind of insight and news stories in your inbox every week, actually 6 days a week, with Alabama Daily News. He'll tell you how to do that when we get back. Plus, we'll talk about the Senate primary for the Republicans, and, you know, some of the polling out there. And what do you think? Do you think we're going to get debates in this? You think we're going to get debates with a full suite of candidates for the Republicans? We'll talk about that, too. Stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Talking to our buddy Todd Stacey from the... How far are you actually from Goat Hill when we're talking right now? Can you see Goat Hill from your house?
We have an office in the State House, but we're not quite to session yet, so we don't use it. But so I'm in Cloverdale, about 5 minutes away.
Okay, so you just, but you're close enough to strike if needed.
Oh, yeah. I'm back and forth between here and downtown all day long, and especially as we get closer to session, more and more meetings. I was in the State House on Monday. We met with all, had a big team meeting to prepare for it, and I'm telling you, it might as well be session right now, because the building is full, the staff, everybody's bustling, so there's still, I think, 20 days away from session, but it's already heating up.
I'm glad you say that, because I say it all the time. I think people think I'm making it up when I said, even though session hasn't started, y'all, there's a lot of stuff already going on in Montgomery. I mean, it's they're setting up everything that's going to happen when they gavel in. That's being set up right now.
Oh, sure. Look, and really for the last couple of months, I mean, the prison reform stuff, that meeting was this week. It was yesterday or 2 days ago. A lot of the, you know, things related to budgets, that they're having hearings already on that. They laid the groundwork far in advance. And so, yeah, if you just wait until the state of the state, you know, the big speech, the first gavel to catch up, then you're already behind, because
behind.
All these lawmakers have been working. So it now is a good time to go ahead and be reading the daily news, because we update you on, okay, here's what bill is coming down the pike. Here's an update on this. Next week, they're going to be doing budget hearings, and a lot of information is going to start being pieced together about what the state's fiscal situation looks like.
I'll be ready to talk more about that for sure as we go forward, because that's going to be a big question. I do want to remind folks, too, you mentioned it. How do they get the email in their inbox?
It's really easy. It's just aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Go there. Up at the top, you'll see subscribe. Just click subscribe, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. There's no cost at all. It's a free subscription. And every morning in your inbox, you'll get an email from me detailing the daily news. And so now's a great time to be subscribing, with the session coming up and the election.
All right, Don, let's talk about the Senate primary for the Republicans. Is it still Sessions in the lead, then Tuberville? And talk about the shakeup in Tuberville's campaign.
Yeah, I see no reason that the race has moved any. Maybe Bradley Byrne has gained some because he's had some good weeks in the news media. He's up on TV with that ad.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's gained some, but we don't have any new polling to show that. But yeah, we reported on our Inside Alabama Politics edition this week that Tuberville has parted ways with his general consultant campaign manager. So Tripp Skipper, who has been with Tuberville really since before the beginning. He was with him as they were considering the governor's race before. But they, I guess some friction existed. What our sources told us, Sean, was that, nobody thought that Sessions was going to get in the race. Nobody did. I didn't. You didn't. No campaign manager out there, no political consultant thought Sessions was going to get in the race, including apparently Tripp Skipper, who told Tuberville, no, I don't expect him to get in the race. Well, he did. Apparently that kind of stuck in the coach's craw, and it sort of bubbled up and eventually cost him his job. It's a shakeup. It's something that happens in campaigns, but in Tuberville's circumstances, it kind of shows, all right, this is that inexperienced, non-politician coming out, and in some ways it's really good because it connects with voters in a different way. This is maybe the bad side of that, not knowing that there are going to be ups and downs in campaigns.
So there's no takeaway that, because I saw it and I said, well, does this mean that the campaign is, they've got internals or whatever that shows they're not performing, this is not getting done, therefore we got to get somebody else in here to finish it out because we're not making it. But some
that
people say it's
could very well be the case.
Okay. So
that
there
could
is
very well be the case, but I haven't seen any of those numbers. What I know is that consistent polling has shown that Tuberville went from being in the lead to second behind Tuberville. I mean, behind Sessions. So that's number one, and it was unexpected, right? Tuberville was cruising in first place really for a while until Sessions got in the race. So that's number one. But number two, we also were told that some of Tripp Skipper, who was the campaign manager and the general consultant, wanted to start spending. Hey, we've got some of this cash. Tuberville's even given some of it himself. Let's get up on TV because we don't want Sessions to get out to such a lead where there's not even a runoff. That's good advice. If I was running the campaign, I'd say the same thing. But I think there's been some hesitation on Tuberville's part to go out and spend his own money. And that happens with campaigns too. But again, it's that inexperience. It's a double-edged sword. It's great when you're that non-politician outsider, but when you connect with voters, but you also lack the experience and sort of political know-how to weather the ups and downs of a campaign.
Talk about the maybes going forward, and I hadn't talked about this bunch, but really at all. But I realize others have in the state, so I can bring it up that there was an idea for a Senate debate for the Republicans here. If you're Sessions, do you pull a Kay Ivey and just stay out of it, or what do you do?
That's an interesting question because it certainly worked for Governor Ivey. Of course, she had an insurmountable lead. For Sessions, it would be a bit of a gamble because you have to at least expect that Tuberville and Byrne and whoever else participated in that debate would beat him up. But let me ask you this. What if both Sessions and Tuberville don't participate?
Yeah.
Well, then Bradley Byrne has a field day calling them out. But does the debate ever happen? If the two top candidates, at least according to polling, don't participate, does the debate happen?
And does anybody watch?
Well, I think that's a kind of a problem in general. But, I'm interested, and you're interested, I know your audience is, but for some of these TV stations, it's a gamble to say, okay, we're going to – right. I mean, if it's only a two-candidate participation, is that worth, not running Wheel of Fortune? Yeah, so they've got to add budgets too.
So right now, we've got like 30 seconds left. If you had to score whether you think this is going to happen or not, you'd say what?
I think a debate's going to happen because eventually, I think it's going to happen, and I certainly hope so because we deserve to see these candidates debate the issues.
Agreed. It'll happen. You just don't know who all will be there.
I think at the end it'll be the top three candidates at least.
Okay, very good. As always, Todd, I appreciate your time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, Sean, be good.
All right, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Go check out that website. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. Talk to y'all tomorrow morning at 6 for Mobile Mornings. Remember, keep up with us online, Facebook and Twitter and FMTalk1065.com, where you can get podcasts, all that good stuff. Go check it out.